Good day and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We are in the dining room of the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island, the site of the Detroit Regional Chamber's annual Mackinac Policy Conference, which is back live after 2 years of COVID-19 disruption. We're talking with the politicians, the business leaders, the leaders of philanthropy who are all here, gathered to think about and talk about and maybe try to solve some of the state's biggest challenges. Joining us now is the chief elections officer for the state of Michigan. Jocelyn Benson is Michigan's secretary of state. Jocelyn, welcome back to Detroit.
Thanks
today.
For having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So I actually want to start with some news that surprised me this week. Politico reports that there's a GOP operation underway to sort of stuff the number of poll workers in Detroit during the next election, essentially to insert more Republicans into the process. And it seems almost as though they're confusing the role of poll worker with poll watcher.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder what you make of this kind of use of the electoral system. It's not really what's intended, but I will say this. We always need poll workers in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So if people want to sign up and come and help, that's actually not a bad thing.
Exactly. I mean, that's where I start from. I mean, it's not a bad thing if people are recruiting folks to serve as poll workers. And what's concerning here, and again, we do welcome election of workers from both sides of the aisle. It's an important part of the transparency of the process. But what's concerning here is that they're being trained with misinformation and potentially put in place not to do the job of a poll worker, but to interfere with the elections process. Now, we also have roles in place to ensure if and when anyone breaks the rules as a poll worker, that they're immediately removed. So the bottom line for us is really twofold. One, if anyone does, I mean, we fully expect, I have every expectation that anyone who serves as a poll worker from, regardless of their affiliation for this year or any year, will follow the protocols and the rules of the very clear rules of what poll workers can and can't do. And if not, they will be removed.
Yeah.
And the second thing, though, is we recruited over 30,000 new election workers in 2020. And a lot of folks who stayed home in 2020, who usually are poll workers, are coming back. So I'm not quite sure how many openings will actually exist this year as well, because so many people have signed up in the past and are continuing to sign up.
So let's talk about the distinction between poll worker and poll watcher or poll challenger. I'm not sure what the term is, but they're two different jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
They're conflating. In some of the things that have come out about this, they're conflating those two things, and that's really dangerous.
It is. Well, and it's I think it, in some ways, as you say, conflates really the potential problem in that, I mean, from my standpoint, if people do apply to be poll workers to do the job of a poll worker, that's a great thing. But if they're going into any polling place, regardless of their role, with an intent of trying to block legitimate voters from getting or casting their ballots or otherwise create confusion or chaos on election day, then we have a serious cause for concern,
mm-hmm.
and one in which we are preparing for. I'm meeting with clerks on Monday to discuss this. We're developing protocols and rapid response plans if and when anything happens anywhere in the state this year or in any other year. And that said, what we are also keeping an eye on is if people come in as poll challengers, poll workers are appointed, selected, and employed by the local clerk,
mm-hmm.
and an answer to them. Poll challengers are appointed by the parties.
The parties.
And so, and they can report to them and do, you know, and so that is a bigger potential threat or concern. And always we want to balance the importance of transparency with the need to protect our operations and the integrity of our election. So, and the bottom line with everything is we are tracking this, we are on it, and we are determined, myself and clerks all across the state of Michigan, to make sure nothing stands in the way between a voter and their vote and their voice being heard this election.
I also wonder what you make of the battle lines in politics being increasingly drawn in electoral spaces that are about infrastructure. The machinery of our elections is being weaponized, or
mm-hmm.
they're attempting to weaponize it. And, you know, whatever you think of which side is right or wrong, seems to me that that's not the point of
right.
the elections to begin with.
Yeah, it was my reflection yesterday is why I was talking about this issue as well, was just this is not the way anyone should be trying to gain power or win elections. This is not how democracy works. You have a discussion on ideas and then persuade voters to support your cause or support your candidates. You don't interfere with the machinery of the elections process to try to sway or overturn election results or intervene with election results that you think aren't going to go your way. And it's an unfortunate outgrowth of what we've seen in 2020. And a lot of the work moving forward to protect the integrity of our elections is going to be about making sure that good people from both sides of the aisle who are committed to the law, committed to the rule of law and integrity, are involved in our democracy and protecting the guardrails, which many seem to want to do away with in an effort to not get power through democracy, but to see democracy as something you tinker with in order to gain power, which is again not the purpose of the system itself.
Yeah. How do we decharge, I guess, that situation? How do you make it so that this kind of things, questions about ballot access, mm-hmm. questions about voting mm-hmm. are not part of the yeah. political machinery.
I think as long as we have candidates for office using this rhetoric, this anti-democracy, un-American rhetoric about overturning election results and interfering with our democracy, as long as we have candidates spouting those falsehoods and that inflammatory misinformation, we're going to have people who are trying to do something about it and misled into these acts. So what we really need are candidates and people seeking political office to stop using dismantling democracy as a platform.
Yeah.
And in order for that to happen, we need voters to reject those candidates who are doing this on, you know, across the board. And that's what November is an opportunity for, in mm-hmm. my view. It's an opportunity. And we saw this to some extent in Georgia during the primary with the election or re-election of Brad Raffensperger, who stood guard over election results against someone who was an election denier trying to replace him. If voters reject those who are denying the truth about our democracy and trying to dismantle it this November, on either side of the aisle, in primaries or generals, we've got a shot at communicating that this is not an effective or it's not an effective political strategy
right.
For anyone seeking power to use. And that is my hope. I think we can all come together in times like this around recognizing that regardless of how we feel about a particular issue, we need democracy to hold, and we need to respect the guardrails and the rules of law around democracy in order for that to happen.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been asking everyone this question this year up here. Why do we do this? Why do we come up here?
Why do we do Mackinac? Or why do we do democracy? Democracy. Why do we do it?
Why do we come up here every year and meet with each other and talk and try to solve our problems? A lot of people who don't see a lot of value in this. I think mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who are skeptical maybe of what actually happens up here. So tell me why you come.
I think in order to solve any problem, you need to listen to people from all sides, both sides, and you need to look at things through a smart data-driven analysis, best practices and the like. And business leaders have done that mm-hmm. in their private capacity as they oversee their work. And I think listening to thought leaders like John Meacham, mm-hmm. Like Ted Koppel, listening to sports leaders like we heard from yesterday, about how they've solved problems and what they see as the problems we need to solve and offer solutions is one of the best ways that we can come together on an island, both sides, and if we all just listen and take the things we're hearing and maybe put them into action, we could actually do some good work on behalf of the state of Michigan. And that's always my hope coming here every year, in addition to getting to talk to people that you normally wouldn't interact with because of the various other reasons downstate. And so I've always found this an opportunity to sit down with members of Congress who are Republican
mm-hmm.
and hear from them
mm-hmm.
and ask them in an informal way their positions on different things and how we can work together. So it is a building bridge opportunity. It's an opportunity to hear best practices. And I do, though, wish it was a little bit closer to...
You wish it was closer to home?
Southeast Michigan. And I'd love to see a scenario where we go back and forth, maybe have some in other parts of the state, or West Michigan,
yeah.
or Traverse City. I mean, there are other places of the state where we can gather for the same types of camaraderie
yeah.
and conversation.
Yeah. No, see, that's an important perspective, and you have it because you're a statewide official. You represent the entire state, and you're mm-hmm. thinking of all these different places. All right,
yeah,
Jocelyn.
Let's go to
Benton.
Houghton next
year.
Yeah,
right. Let's try that.
I've got a branch office there. We can all stop by.
That's right.
We can host.
Hey, Jocelyn Benton, Michigan Secretary of State. It is always great.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks.
You've heard us talking about the One Small Step Project from StoryCorps. We're inviting you to sign up at wdet.org/onesmallstep to participate in a conversation with a stranger who has different views than your own. And we've asked other organizations to partner with us to get out the word and get participants on different sides of the aisle to take part. One of our partners is WJR Radio, and I was invited to join my friend Paul W. Smith on their morning show to talk about our project. Here's part of that conversation.
And so WJR is partnering with Detroit's NPR station, WDET, Bridge, Michigan, the Detroit Regional Chamber, the Civility Project, and Affirmations Ferndale to bring people together across the political divide we face in this region and, frankly, in the whole country. So we're asking you to participate with One Small Step. Do you believe we have more in common than what divides us? Well, simply put, yes, we have more in common. I'm not sure how we get there, but we're working on it. And a guy who's working on it in a big way is Stephen Henderson, the host of Detroit Today at 9 to 10 on Detroit's NPR station. And Joan Isabella, who's an alum from WJR, used to produce Mitch's show. And now she's currently the program director at WDET and works with you and on your show. Stephen, welcome.
That's true. Hey, Paul.
I ran into Stephen on the elevator. I said, Stephen, I'm supposed to be on your show, and I don't know why. I'm not the guest on shows. I'm the host of shows. I ask the questions. I'm very nervous when someone's asking me questions. But you said, well, Paul, you know, it's because we don't get along, and we have to figure out a way. Wait a minute, Stephen. I get along
Never
with you.
Never gotten along, Paul. You know that.
I get along with you. What are you talking about? Well, then the One Small Step program was revealed, and it's obviously something very important.
Yeah. You know, I mean, just look around us and think about the conversations that we can't have. Think about the conversations that we are having that go horribly wrong. You know, this idea that that we don't know each other anymore across the political or the cultural divide, the idea that we don't respect each other is kind of everywhere. And you know, I've spent a lot of time trying to emphasize that there is a different way to think of these things, right? We can all be really passionate about what we believe. We can all be great advocates for our side, quote unquote. But we can also build relationships with people who don't share those things with us. And a couple of things become possible when you do that. One is you can actually have a spirited or passionate argument with somebody across the political divide, if you know who that person is, if you like that person, if you understand where their ideas are coming from. And then the other thing that's possible, of course, is that we're able to come up with solutions, right? To say, all right, well, I see how you think. It's different than the way I think, but here are places where they overlap, and that we can come up with that kind of middle ground. Some of the stuff I think is pretty basic and sounds a little cliche, but it's so hard to get people to do it right now.
I don't know what it is about discourse and having different opinions that makes people believe if they speak louder, it's like when we go overseas and we don't speak the language, somehow we think that if we speak English louder, they're going to understand what we're saying.
Right.
And in the same way, you have a strong feeling about something, I may have a strong feeling that's totally different, but we can discuss it or we're getting nowhere.
Yeah.
It's got to be, no matter how strongly we feel about any issue, there has to be civility or you're not going to accomplish anything, because all that's going to happen is you're going to fight.
Yeah.
And you're going to know you're fighting, and you're going to get nowhere. So if something's really important to you, think about this. The best way to get your point across and maybe convince someone who feels differently is to do it in a civil way.
Yeah, yeah. And so think about the relationship that you and I have. We've known each other a long time. Like I said, we've never gotten along. But that's another story.
He's kidding. I am joking.
But we don't agree on almost anything, right? Politically. I mean,
you and I?
Yeah.
I honestly don't really think of you. When I think of you, I don't think of you politically. I swear I don't.
Well,
I mean,
and that's the point, right?
I think of you as Stephen Henderson.
Right.
And then you have a political view. I have a political view. I don't look at. Congresswoman Debbie Dingell is in her place of honor on the couch next to Joan Isabella. And we're like brother and sister, and we don't agree on many issues.
That's
but
right.
I would never mistreat her, because we have varying views and ideas.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, for us, that is the way the world makes sense, and it's the way the world has made sense for a really long time. But for so many other people, I think there are real challenges to that. Because, again, we don't know each other. There are so many barriers to the idea of getting to know somebody who disagrees with you, or how you do that, or where do you start? How do you get to know somebody before you talk about politics and the things that you don't agree on?
So, Stephen Henderson, where do we go from here, from the island where lots of things are discussed and lots of things are decided, but how do we bring this back home?
Well, I mean, I think this One Small Step program is a really great way for people to start. Have a conversation with someone you don't agree with. Start the conversation. Make sure that you can approach somebody with respect and inquiry and curiosity as opposed to antipathy. Nolan Finley, who's my partner in the Civility Project, we always talk about the experience that we had with StoryCorps, an NPR project a few years ago, where we went and told each other our stories, right? Nolan told me what experiences in his life made him into a conservative, what made him think that conservative solutions are the way to deal with our problems. As I say, he explained to me why he's always so wrong. Where does that come from?
But you said it in such a civil way. And being the good host that I am, your producer put something in front of you that you didn't look at. I'm going to say it. Sign up today.
Oh, there you go.
At
See, you're paying attention. I'm not.
I follow any producers. Anne has me so well trained. Sign up today at WDET.org. WDET.org/one small step.
Yeah.
So everybody go there is what she wants, because she works at WDET.
She does.
So anyway.
She's my boss.
She does a fine job, and we miss her at WJR.
We'll be back with more from the Mackinac Policy Conference after this.